Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We're routine to call the scenes. We put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off from mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how do you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, and it's true, country folks can survive. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there in these day and ages. You know, when it comes down to being able to take care of yourself, maybe you ought to go out and find your friend that lives out in the country and ask them how they do it. You never know what's going to happen. You know, the blanket of global warming outside is about a couple inches. We just got some nice, beautiful white snow out there. It makes things around you a little bit cold. So you gotta know how to get you a fireplace going on in case the power grid's down or something like that. You know, the biggest part of any problem that you're going to find out there in this world is being ready for it. You know, knowing what to do whenever it comes around. There's a lot of survivalists out there and a lot of preppers out there, a lot of different people that know a lot of stuff about going out hunting and fishing and growing food and all this kind of stuff. But how much of that do you know personally? You know, a lot of that stuff is really important. You know, for the most part, you take everything for granted until you actually get to the position where you need, you know, that kind of information. You know, such as, health issues or whatever. You know, if you're accustomed to having medicine around that you're normally accustomed to during great times, where would you be if the system went down a little bit, so to speak, and you weren't able to get your medicines that you were normally used to using? You know, the stores were messed up. You know, I only bring this stuff up not as a fear-monger kind of issue, but as a common sense kind of issue. You know, you're watching the stock market bounce up and down out there, and you never know from one day to the next what kind of craziness is going to go on in society. And so it's a really good idea to try to prepare yourself for any just such an emergency, you know, and alternative energy being, as far as I'm concerned, one of the main issues right there. Health, food, and water, you know. There's a lot of different radio hosts out there that do all kinds of stuff that, you know, like, for example, foraging. You know, do you know what kind of plant life that's in your neighborhood that you can eat? That would sustain you and all that kind of stuff. You know how many days you can go without fresh water or without food and such. These are all important things, you know, for survival. You know, we live in a modern society where everybody's so used to being able to just go to the grocery store anytime they want. And if all heck broke loose, where would they stand? You know, how would you fare? I once asked some folks, you know, let's just pretend for a second and say hypothetically all heck breaks loose, right? And you got to get from point A to point B with just what's in your pocket alone. And so, you know, they'd take the stuff out of their pocket. You know, maybe they got keys, maybe they got a wallet and a comb, you know, and maybe a cell phone, and that was it. That's what you got to get over there to from point A to point B with. And so, since we're saying this is worst case scenario, you don't have no cell phone service, so that's pretty much not something that's going to be used for communication as far as that goes. However, there is a light on that cell phone. It's not much of a light, unless you got that light app that a lot of kids have these days. It's pretty neat. But, so either way, at least maybe it's a potential flashlight so you can get around in the dark or something like that. There's probably alternative uses for a comb that you could use for certain things to, you know, pry something open whatever. Get out there on YouTube and look around and take note of some of the different things that people show, you know. Some of them call them life hacks. You know, there's a guy out there called Crazy Russian Hacker, and he does all kinds of life hacks. You know, I watch some of the people come on his YouTube channel, and they give him a lot of guff, you know, because they don't like the way he delivers it or whatever, you know. But in reality, you know, this morning I decided I'm going to open me up a bottle of wine. I looked all over for a doggone corkscrew. You know, I couldn't find a corkscrew to save my soul. So I was sitting there and I'm thinking, how am I going to get this doggone bottle of wine open when I ain't got no doggone corkscrew? And I remembered back to the Crazy Russian Hacker showing several different ways you could open a wine bottle with a corkscrew. So I got me a screwdriver and I poked it down in the side there and pushed the cork down just a little bit enough to get it wet. And then I poked it down a little bit further and then I started spinning this thing around and popped it right out while pulling pressure up on it. And doggone it, opened it up with a just as something simple as a screwdriver. You know, that's, to most folks, that's not really that big of a deal, but, you know, if you're trying to get into, like, say, a can of food and you don't have a can opener, there's things to factor in. How would you open up a can if you didn't have a can opener? You know, we don't think about those things when we got access to the tools. You know, if you average Joe today, you know, you can't get into the wine bottle, so somebody drives up to the doggone store and buys a corkscrew and comes back and pow, the party's on. But if you didn't have access to the store and you didn't have access to a hardware store or anything like that, that you could actually go get whatever it was you needed, you know, it's like you either make it or figure it out or whatever, because you're pretty much on your own. Medicine ain't no different either. What other alternatives can you use for, you know, antibacterial or you know, antiseptic or something like that, something for pain relief, something to for a burn or a rash? There's a lot of alternative media guys and gals out here that have all kinds of remedies, home remedies and stuff like that, that would be beneficial to gather up that knowledge. You know, put it out on a USB disk or a CD or something like that, because you know, surely in today's society you could actually keep a laptop running if a worst case scenario come around, unless maybe you got it got blasted in an EMP or something like that. But I think for the most part, as long as it ain't plugged in and, you know, it's shielded behind something, it'd be just fine. But, you know, I don't want to get into a whole kind of survivalist deal. Just trying to point out that there's a lot of things going on out there in this world today that people just need to kind of keep their eyes and ears wide open, you know. A lot of different pieces of the puzzle being moved into certain sections that it just, you know, it's kind of like the old phrase, a smell a rat kind of thing, you know. And it's worrisome whenever you got a family and children and you want to try to, you know, keep them safe and all that, and, you know, keep tabs where everybody's at so you know everybody's okay and all that. But worst case scenario, and you got to be able to get down to rescue somebody, you know, how would you get there? Just got all what you got in your pocket or your vehicle outside or whatever. There's so many different things that factor in. And I think the hardest part of all of life out here is being able to weed through what we've been told to be truth or not truth, fact or fiction. I posted a video over here at shazizradio.com/superchat.html, and this particular video has to, in my mind, has to do with so-called free energy device that's out there that somebody's out there pressing, and I'm not even going to say their name, but I'm pretty sure that if you actually go and look at this, this is called a power factor correction capacitors. It's pretty interesting how this thing functions. It basically, it's used to any inductive loads. It kind of stores power before the load so that it actually makes your house more energy efficient, and it actually takes the power from the power grid. It doesn't spin your meter nearly as fast because it kind of absorbs the load, such as like when you very first turn something on in your house, it's not once it's up and running that is the biggest deal. It's that sudden surge that kind of spins the meter up real fast until it levels back out and catches up to the power, unless it's a really seriously drawing a load, then it'll eventually level itself out to where it'll slow down. But what this power factor correction capacitor does is actually buffers between the grid and whatever inductive load that you're using it with. Such as if I got a electric motor that I'm running, and, you know, a lot of the electric motors these days have a heavy capacitor on there so that they can pretty much do the same thing. to give it that extra boost so that motor can actually turn over. Well, that's what this does, but it does it in a fashion that it is like a spring. It's like a cushion between the motor and the electric power grid. So it actually makes your power grid more energy efficient by absorbing that load and storing a little bit of a charge there. So it's called a power factor correction capacitor, and I posted that video link over there. It's on Galco TV, G-A-L-C-O TV on YouTube, and you got to take a look at it, because at the worst case scenario, when it comes to alternative energy, saving energy is going to be a plus there, no matter what. You know, take a few lights off the power grid using solar and batteries, and then take these systems and put them before your inductive loads. That way, that it reduces the energy uses. A lot of the houses these days aren't set up to be like smart powerhouses or whatever. I'm not talking about smart grid like them smart meters or anything like that. I'm basically talking about, you know, when you got a really heavy duty inductive or resistive load, that there's something there to keep a little extra power in reserve there, so that it's not a direct drain off the grid. If it's not a direct drain off the grid, it's not going to spin that meter really fast and cost you a lot of money. Anyway, like I said, it's the biggest problem that I see in society today is being able to weed through truth and fiction. You know, there's a another video link that I posted in there. It's Galen Windsor. It's not the original video that it's just somebody on YouTube had copied the most important section of this video, but it's the nuclear scare scam video where Galen Windsor talks about the hoax about energy generation not being as dangerous as what they're trying to say it is. Because it's blatantly obvious that the power companies wouldn't want everyone out there to have their own mass-produced nuclear reactor out in their doggone yard, because if everybody knew that they could do this to generate heat and power, then there's no use for the power company anymore. So that's essentially what, you know, you just whether you believe what you hear there or not, just listen to it and make up your own decision on the deal. But it makes a lot of sense to me, because I understand how they actually do the radioactive material so that they can, you know, have the nuclear power plants out there. You know, you take what is a natural radiation, naturally radioactive material out of the ground, and it's continuously depleting itself. It's deteriorating, and as it deteriorates, it releases energy, and that energy can be captured, you know. And if you take that same material and you refine it and get it down to just the particles that are radioactive and no other elements in there, then now you have a really highly radioactive material. And they put these in ceramic rods, and they put these ceramic rods down into water, and the energy being released as it is deteriorating, as it's depleting itself, the energy being released is at such a rate that it's actually vibrating the water molecules, causing the water to boil, because these things are really super hot. Well, if you take old technology such as steam generation, which goes way, way, way back. Even there's the oldest, I got a picture of the oldest steam engine somewhere on the Mad Science Channel. It's probably on the Mad Science podcast page. I'll have to jump over there real quick and take a peek. But there's a picture there of a really really, really old steam engine. And I have no idea what this doggone thing's called because I can't remember it. I'm going to copy the image location there, and then I'm going to take and post it down there in the chat room. But steam power goes way back. And so if you was able to take this old technology, mix it with modern technology such as the doggone highly radioactive rods, and boil water, now you got old technology, old steam boiler system mixed with modern day technology as far as how you're going to heat the water. Back in the day, it was like coal or wood or whatever that would, you know, produce the heat necessary to boil the water. But now they use the radioactive material to boil the water. Well, that's all well and good because it works just fine. But the problem then lies in whether or not you can control that burn. Whether or not you can control the pressure built up in the old plumbing systems of the old steam style generators. Well, if the water gets boiled too hot, then, you know, and you have a rupture, now you've got water that is pretty much radioactive coming up out of the, you know, hot steam radioactive water coming up out of the doggone boiler system. Which, you know, at certain amounts of radioactivity is not a good thing. And you gotta, you know, go wait till that water finally cools down, dissipates. But there's a way in which you could do the same exact thing without all the dangers up ahead. And if Galen Windsor was correct in what he said, that the radioactive material is only dangerous if you get a blue flash. If you mix this material with that material and you get a nuclear fission, that instant blue flash is what you know, causes all the really bad things to occur there. So, weeding through all the truth out there, weeding through all the propaganda and all the craziness, that to me, in my mind, is the biggest portion of why we can't get anything done these days. You know, the so-called energy crisis, in my mind, is, it's worse than a joke. It's, in my mind, it's criminal. Because on one hand, you're being told all these different things out there, such as the world is in danger, and we're destroying the world, and we got to fix the world, and this and that. But everything out there, every potential energy out there that could literally do exactly what it is that they're saying is either being overlooked or swept underneath the rug and is not being paid attention to. Now, I've heard a lot of people being in panic mode over radioactive, you know, material. And I've heard a lot of, you know, doomsday prophecies about, you know, like what's going on in Fukushima out there. You know, they had a meltdown out there, a couple different reactors. But as time goes by, and I think back as far as as the Fukushima's been going on, I even think back to the BP oil spill and all the craziness. The governments of the world don't seem to be concerned. It's just the people of the world that seem to be concerned. Now, you have to ask yourself, why, if they're telling you on one hand that this is going on, are they not addressing it firsthand? Like, for example, if a building catches fire, the firemen don't wait around to debate about it. They take it seriously. They jump in there, they put the fire out, and, you know, rescue whoever needs to be rescued, and so on and so forth. But they do it, like, now, because the urgency is immediate. And even if they saw a small fire burning, which right now at this point the fire is not that far out of control, and so it's not an immediate danger, so we don't have to worry about it right at the moment. We'll come back here when it gets a little worse, and then we'll start putting that fire out. No, the fire department goes right directly. They see the potential hazard, and they rush right over there, and they put the fire out. Well, one would think the government would do the same doggone thing. If the planet's going to be heating up, if it's just now starting, and you can see the fire started, and you know where it's going to end up, then you go over there and you address it immediately. But that's not the case in what we're seeing out here. There's not nations rushing over to Japan to try to clean up the mess that's been made out there. You don't hear about it on the news anymore. Nobody talks about the Fukushima disaster. And even Chernobyl that you heard about years ago, you know, after a while it just became like old news. Oh yeah, right, there's a nuclear mess over there. Just don't go over there. I hope that what I'm saying makes sense to you. But if we're in the danger that everybody keeps saying, if there's a terrorist behind every bush, then all this stuff needs to be addressed. And it needs to be addressed real time. Not later on down the line whenever things are, it's too late. That's why I'm saying that we the people out here need to be prepared. We the people out here need to be informed. We need to know what's going on so that we can address any potential problem that's coming our way. It's too late to save your Constitution after they've already stolen it. You know, all of our rights are from our Creator. Nobody has the right to take those away from us. But yet they do. Under threats of violence or imprisonment or whatever. They do. And the only reason why they get by with that is because society allows them to do that. Oh, it's for the best, you know, we can't have everybody running around with guns, you know, because it'd be like the old West or something like that, you know. And they'll figure out ways to justify this not only to themselves but everybody else, why it is that they should give away their rights and freedom, you know, for safety. The problem is, once it's gone, it's gone. And getting it back is basically, unless you're the bigger bully on the block and you can put the beat down on the ones that take it away from you, then you're going to have problems getting it back. It's it's kind of crazy. It's ironic that we the people out here, it's like we're in total chaos and we're in imminent danger of something. There's either a doomsday rock coming from space, or a major superquake, or a mega volcano, or stock market crashes, or World War III. And the truth about it all is, we don't even know. We don't know if any of this stuff's going to happen. All we know is what we've been told, the information that we've heard. And we don't know how many people out there, how much of the information that we have been told is legitimate or not. Fact or fiction? Hoax or propaganda? It's frustrating. You know, common sense dictates that if you're saying that carbon emissions are causing the planet to heat up, and there are ways to drastically, if not completely, reduce carbon emissions, then you'd want to jump on that right out of the gate. Looks like Muddy tried to call me there. But he must have bailed. Unless he lost his internet connection. Honest Abe's used internet. Yay! Hey, Muddy, how you doing, brother? You're live.
Right, we're on the show, right?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you had a call going or not.
Not yet. Just don't be a foul-mouthed heathen and we'll get along just fine.
Oh, man.
I gotta read a comment out of Steve Gibbon put in there. Hang in there for a second, brother. Stephen posted a link to freeenergy.info.uk. It says, lots of ideas and inventions. Go to page 15 and compare the unipolar dynamo with your electricity meter, unipolar dynamo. Tesla's design varied from that of Faraday's in two major ways. First, he used a magnet that was bigger in the diameter than the disc, so the magnet completely covered the disc. Second, he divided the disc in two sections with spiral curves radiating out from the center to the outside edge. So basically, he made it a lot more efficient. So, you still there, buddy? Didn't mean to cut you off. I just,
No, I was just sitting there thinking about that. I was thinking about making one that had a disc that was bigger than the magnet, wondering if that would help or hurt. So, if it says it's more efficient having a bigger magnet than the disc, well, I can see that because the magnet is basically what is the converter.
Yeah, come just a hair closer to your microphone.
Probably getting low on battery gain.
Uh-oh, that's what it's going to do, that scree, scree, and blee, blee thing?
No, that's not mine. That's Justin's that does.
Oh, okay. So anyway, what was you saying now?
The size of the disc and the size of the magnet. Of course, a bigger magnet is going to have more flux to convert energy anyway, so yeah. I took that question and answered it right away.
Cool. So,
you know, I was actually talking to Jeff at Missouri Wind and Solar. He was talking about how the wind turbines out here, the axial flux ones, they cost more. They don't necessarily put out more, but they cost more to build, but they're more heavy duty, and yeah, that's something you can will to your grandchildren so they can will it to their kids because they last, you know, and they're heavy duty and stuff.
Yeah, that's but, a key, man. They need to be sturdy.
They're talking about making one cheap, and we got off into the subject of these homopolar motors and putting a prop on them to see what they do. So that's got, that kind of got one more iron in the fire of my list of experiments to do. I know I can build a small prop like I got on the Slurpee 104, and that prop is fast. I'd love to see what it would actually do, what kind of RPMs I'd get out of it. And you figure it's only one speaker magnet. You can get those anywhere. You know that's free. Find a disc, put a shaft through it, make some pillow blocks, drill a hole through the pillow block, heat the shaft up and run it through and get you a nice free carbon bearing. And all you really need after that is a spacer and a prop.
Cool. You got to get that ceiling fan motor from Raymond that I sent out there for you to test out.
Yeah, I was handling that yesterday. I was playing around with it and showing Stuart Lechte on the camera the way the magnets are mounted.
Oh, you got it now?
Oh, it's sitting right next to me.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, that might not be the one you guys were talking about, but I got this one that he put the heavy-duty magnets in. I had rewound to 18-gauge wire. That's the one I was talking about.
No. I sent one out with Raymond that I put the weaker ceramic magnets in. And I was wanting you to try to put a prop on there to give it some test to see what, you know, kind of voltage comes up out of that.
Right. And you didn't rewind it, right?
No. I didn't want to rewind it.
Well, I know, I already know what those do. My first ceiling fan wind turbines were ceramic magnets. And ones from Walmart. Yeah, they lit quite a few LEDs. So.
Well, I was wondering, the reason why I was wanting to do that, because I want to see, just basically, right off the store shelf, if a person had access to some magnets or something like that and a little bit of epoxy, that they could turn any, you know, ceiling fan motor into an emergency generating kind of system. Obviously, it's not going to do, you know, run your whole house. It's not.
Oh, no, well, neither will the regular ceiling fan motors. But what happens is because the prop really wants to go faster and there's very little resistance because you're not drawing as many amps, what happens is it doesn't have that drag, that electromechanical drag from Lenz's law, so the prop actually goes and spins faster, almost like it's freewheeling. And it gets up to the voltage anyway, and it still puts out amps.
Yeah.
The prop is just going to be spinning about 8 times as fast in your higher winds and still be putting out pretty much the same. It's all about drag and amps.
Yeah, in my case, I couldn't care less about, you know, amperage or anything like that. I just want the voltage. It doesn't matter if it's 400 volts at the lower amperage or anything like that. So all I'm looking for is high voltage. That's it.
You got some of that angel here, angel hair sized enamel wire. Put as many turns on that stupid thing as you can. Just go ahead and rewind it with that. Then throw some heavy magnets on that bad boy. I'll tell you what, you'll get some voltage. You'll definitely get some voltage.
My problem is my mechanical skills reek. Not my mechanical skills, but my manufacturing skills reek. Now, once you got that old thing on there, how is it you're going to get that coating stripped off of that wire to solder to it?
Oh, you know, you just put a match and then you rub your fingers across it. Usually you can solder it. If it doesn't, you know, you got to be real careful with the match not to melt the wire, because it's so fine, you know. So that's all it is, just burn the enamel off and you're ready to solder to it.
That's the thing. I put together right here on the radio show, I put a store together out here. Of course, we ain't really got around to putting their stuff on there, but I put the message out a long time ago about there's a, let me see if I can find a link and click on the doggone thing. It must have been on the, hold on. Anyway, there's a link, I believe it's on the Mad Science, or the Knights of the Round Table page, it's not the Super Chat Room. I might have to move a copy of it over. But, basically, I wanted to put this store together. There it is, Mad Scientist Store. I want to put this store together for people to sell their own products. Now, none of the money would come to Shaziz Radio at all. It's just that you would give me a code to post for wherever your PayPal account was or whatever, and I'd post pictures up there for you. And essentially, you'd be in control of your own deal. And there was also a section down there where it talks about free products. Like if I had some things that I think people could use, I could donate them. And that way all they'd have to do, maybe worst case scenario, help out with some shipping or something like that if they needed like an old motor or something like that delivered to them or whatever. But I could go on this free products deal and I could either donate products to other researchers, or I can get something that I need for my research. And so with that said, I need to get back into getting people out there interested into posting their links and stuff on their products they want to sell. So far there's only like you got a fishing rod going on over there?
No, I picked up this lightsaber to move it and accidentally pressed the button.
Oh. Alright, so anyway, I'll post a link in the chat room over there so that people can see what it is I'm talking about. I got a little bitty list of things. And the reason why I brought that up is because there's a lot of things that people make out there, whether they be little circuitry or like your windmills.
Mobile or wind turbine, yeah.
Yeah. That if they want to make them,
that'd be the first one out there. What do you think?
Yeah. If I was a researcher and I had a lot of projects working on and I came across a little circuit, you know, I could get on there and I could talk to other researchers who might make some in their spare time that I, instead of having to take the time. See, I bought a Slayer Exciter from Ryan Abrams whenever I wanted to do some tests on that. You know, I paid him some good money to make it, and it was worth it to me because it saved me time, and he does a quality job on his coils. It was beautiful. I even did a video on it.
Oh, yeah, beautiful coils.
But the point is, It opens up another little market there in alternative energy. If you got something that you want to try to, you know, to share with people, and you know, you have the time to actually put something together, you know, you could ship it out and work a deal between the two of you. You know, maybe I got something on my lab that you need, and we can swap our talents for each other. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So if somebody was really talented at winding coils that they could do, like one that you were talking about, where the really fine hair for a high-voltage wind turbine, you know, and could give me a price of what it would cost to do it, I'd be interested in having that done, because, you know, I want the high voltage portion of it. And I'm not
right.
worried about all the wattage or the current right at this point. So,
as long as it chases you around the arm, around the yard shooting lightning at you.
Yeah, if it chases me around the yard with a lightning bolt, I'm pleased. That's, you know, that's a lot of power. So, Stephen Gibbons put another message in there. Alternating current powering the electromagnetic flipping the field 60 hertz, 60 times a second on a disc. A pickup coil then supplies your home with direct current. So if the only... I'm terrible at reading stuff out. If the only thing they are sending to your home is a alternating current, and as we know, alternating current runs back and forth in a closed loop sent directly to the ground, how much electricity that they are sending you are you using? My brain is telling me zero, and am I wrong? No, I don't believe he's wrong at all. You only get paid whenever you have that thing, or you only get charged when you have that thing under load, which is constant. You know, you got that little meter just cooking away inside there. But, crud it. Stop it. All right. I got too many windows open here, and I was trying to shut off the wrong ones.
Be cool. If it didn't take so much to build a WimSearch device, that's an electrical generator that doesn't use any magnets.
Well, that's true, but...
Here's the thing about a WimSearch device, if I put a prop on it. It would arc, and then it goes to zero, and then it builds slowly. Then all of a sudden it starts building faster because it has electrical charge to work with to, you know... to make the moving capacitor plates, you know, amplify the voltage, and then it takes it and goes on. Most of the energy from a WimSearch device is built up within the last few seconds before it arcs. So, instead of letting it arc, put some resistors between the, between the latent jars, and draw your juice off at a steady rate, and keeping the voltage up real high. What do you think of that?
Well,
that'd be more efficient.
For certain concepts, that'd be great. But from what I'm wanting to do is more like the static charge is built up during the WimSearch. I don't know if you've ever really paid attention. Right before that voltage shoots across the gap, you can literally feel an ion wind, where you get sort of a Venturi effect that's actually bringing energy with it at the same exact time. And then that hits the capacitor and charges that capacitor up.
Yeah.
And so you can charge a capacitor more rapidly with a spark gap than you can with a direct connection. As crazy as that sounds, the static charge. Man, I'll tell you what, that Van de Graaff generator, which... basically works off of friction, that thing will surprise the heck out of you how much voltage you can actually get into a capacitor.
Right.
And you know, I've actually hurt myself a few times with a big old capacitor because I didn't realize it charged up so doggone quick. Lucky it didn't blow my arm off.
A lot of people think that static's it's just static electricity. There's no amps. There's nothing to it. There's no power. But when it knocks you on your butt, it changes your mind. You say, ooh, yeah, I need to work with this a little longer.
Yeah, and so basically what I was going to get to as far as Stephen Gibbons' comment about how that energy is actually used. See, the biggest part of the bill is that once you do kick it under a load, you got a direct connection right to the grid. All right, and so that starts up your amp draw right there, and that speeds up that meter going on inside there. Well, imagine if the only thing that you had connected to that was a high voltage transformer that would take the energy right off the grid, and instead of making a direct connection, a loop back, and having that under load, you're just sending an arc across to a capacitor bank. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So the only voltage that you would be getting charged for is whatever it takes to run that transformer. You see what I mean? You're still moving the energy across. You just don't have it under a direct load. And the more rapidly you can move that energy across, the faster you can charge those capacitors up. And then in turn, bleed that off down into battery banks and then into inverters. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. It's also, I mean, yeah, you're just using it, you're going to amplify what you're getting as far as voltage goes and then use it then.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of circuits out there, doubler circuits and stuff like that, that'll bring the voltage up. Of course, you know, when you bring the voltage up, it brings the amperage down and so on and so forth. But we're not worried about amperage at this time. All we want to do is move that energy. And just like
you
said
earlier, that's the thing about the high voltage. The voltage times current equals power. It's how much power you're putting in. Can you get the same power out or better? Really go up and once you get to a certain threshold in voltage, that's where your over unity seems to pop in here and there every now and then. Then when you bring it back down, you'll find out you have voltage and current.
Well, imagine,
more than you started with in order to start your process.
Imagine if you took that, instead of running electricity like you do, where it's actually draining a load because it's a direct connection to the grid, you send that high voltage into an argon or helium or neon or halogen or any of the noble gases, and you energize that into the plasma state. Now you've got a lot of voltage coming down that power line, all right? And if you can energize that, when the voltage comes down through the transformer, it's stepped down so that it will work on your service, whatever service you got, whether 100 amp or 200 amp service. And so you got a transformer that's going to step it back up again. It's going to take it from whatever service you've got up to a high voltage, higher frequency, and blast that in through the chamber that's holding the gas. That gas is then energized into the plasma state and then turns into basically visible light and heat. You take that energy that you want to use away in the form of heat, and then you got, like, let's say you're running water through there and you're flashing that water into steam because it's so incredibly hot. You're turning turbines on the opposite side of that with that steam pressure that you're building up, because we know that steam expands magnitudes times whatever water is being going through there. So you're building up a lot of pressure. And pressure is where you get your work done. That's why I say high voltage, voltage is pressure, and then you can get work done with pressure.
Yeah, and RPMs, torque is usually amps.
So if you now are able to produce on-demand steam, and you can build up a pressure anywhere from 650 to 1200 PSI, you got an industrial strength boiler system power supply right there.
Right.
If you're running that through turbines, and you got condensers going on that you can actually, you know, reclaim some of that water, you know, now you got hot water, which you can run through radiators, or even hot steam through radiators. That's how the old boiler systems used to work back in the old days, back in the, you know, early 1800s and 1900s. They had a boiler that would send steam through pipe systems and radiators, and that's how they heated the house. And so, not only you got the benefit of the steam heat, but you also got the benefit of the steam pressure that you're then in turn running a generator head or whatever. And from that point on, it don't matter. You can put it under load. As long as the generator handles the load that you got it on, none of that energy is going to transfer back to the initial power source, so that means that you're paying for the energy that you got. You're not stealing nothing. You just took that energy and used it more efficiently and ramped it up, and now you're using your generator head as an inefficient device. You see what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, it's like if you're going to water the garden at night, build you a little deal onto your hose that uses the water pressure and movement to generate electricity, so you have a light that lights yourself while you're watching the garden. The plants don't care how much pressure it had or how much flow. It just depends on, all they care about is they got this much water. And in the meantime, you got to use some light.
So if everybody out there took and built them a transformer that stepped it up from the voltage, the normal voltage coming off of your power source, and then stepped it up to a higher voltage at a higher frequency, and then used that to energize gas into the plasma state, and then took that heat away from that and the energy off of that, am I wrong in saying that the so-called carbon emissions, whatever the power company, whatever it takes them to run it, would go down a lot more because each house is only running one device that's actually connected to the grid. You see what I mean?
Right.
Well, this device that Keshi's out there pushing around, and I don't
the
even...
You have to believe in and have pure intentions.
Yeah, you gotta love your reactor. But either way, this device that he's pushing around, I posted a link over here in the chat room, and I wasn't even going to mention Keshi because it just, that word don't roll off your tongue very good. Anyway, if you go and check on this link right here, I don't know if I had it already open or not. I'm going to pop it back up. Let me see if I can just play this and let you hear a little bit of it.
Welcome to GTV. Today I will be showing you ABB's Power Factor Correction Capacitors. To save energy and have a more cost-efficient electrical power system where inductive loads are in use, it is sometimes necessary to have power factor correction capacitors so that the voltage and current can be closer in phase and the power factor is improved. In commercial and industrial power systems, the utility company charges on the power consumed, which is the sum of real and reactive power. Highly inductive loads, such as motors, take more from the supplied power than actually needed and increase the overall power consumption. Reducing the total current closer to the actual current required would result in greater efficiency and less power being used. Often industrial companies without some form of power correction can be penalized by the utility companies for having a poor power factor due to the inductive loads in their facility. Power factor correction capacitors reduce the total power consumption closer to the actual power consumed by adding capacitance into the circuit and offsetting the load's inductance when needed. The ABB power factor correction caps use dry type dielectric with no liquids to prevent environmental concerns from leakage and are housed in a NEMA 1, 12, or 3R enclosures for indoor or outdoor use. The capacitors utilize a sequential protection system with one or more self-healing capacitors for each phase. In case of a dielectric breakdown, the fault is cleared by the evaporation of the metallized layer around the breakdown. There are internally protected elements that can also be disconnected from the circuit at the end of the element's life and are insulated by granulated vermiculite. There are auto bank and fixed bank capacitors available. The fixed bank capacitors are intended for point of use applications, adding capacitance when the inductive load starts, correcting the power factor at the load. For larger plants where there may be a series of motors, lighting ballasts, or any other significant inductive load dispersed throughout a facility, a fixed bank may be impractical. In this case, an automatic bank could be installed at the service entrance. Auto banks have more functionality and can be programmed to add more or less capacitance depending on the load. To find out more about how to select and apply an ABB power factor correction capacitor or autobank, please contact Galco sales representative at the number listed below. ABB's power factor correction capacitors, along with thousands of other products and services, are available at Galco.com.
All right, so basically what that lady was talking about was if you actually looked into what that so-called McGrath power unit that Keshi's got going on,
right,
it's pretty much what it is. He just changed the name. So, you know, outside the difference of, you know, nano coat and the copper wire, you really got the same exact thing going on. You see what I'm saying?
I didn't hear the message.
Oh. Well, that makes it hard.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, anyway, essentially, you basically have a capacitor before the inductive load. And it's set up so that it is a buffer between the let's say the wall outlet and the load. All right, so you know what usually causes your electricity. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but let's say you got incandescent light bulbs, and the moment you go in there and you flip the light on real quick. So when you turn that light on, that instant surge spins the meter a little bit quicker until it levels out. You see what I mean?
Right.
And so...
Same thing as an electric motor. It uses a lot of amps until it starts up.
Yeah, so the biggest part of your bill isn't that you left your lights on. It's the turning them on and off all the time. You see what I mean?
Yeah, like Tesla used to do.
Yeah, because you spin... Once you flip that switch on, it spins up real quick and, you know, charges you more electricity. So you can imagine if you got like compressor motors or electric motors of any kind kicking on and kicking off, it's that initial drain on the system that costs you a lot of money. So these are set up in between the power source and the load, so that it's a buffer zone. It stores a little bit of energy just long enough for you to get that thing leveled out a lot quicker, which makes your energy usage more efficient. So, best case scenario, all he has done is replicated this particular technology, called it something completely different, and pretty much claimed it for himself.
Right, just find a different look for it.
Yeah. So these units that I would be fascinated to see somebody do some measurements, but I would also would not be surprised to find out that these particular units that we're talking about here are will save you at least 40% of your doggone energy usage just by putting them before whatever load you're running. You see what I mean?
I don't see how this technology is supposed to work to where you're supposed to get more out of it. That's what I've watched it. I know Zero Fossil Fuel is doing the building the replica and all that.
Yeah, he did, and he totally debunked everything Keshi was talking about. But his deal is it's how he actually worded everything to make it sound like free energy, but it's not free energy. It's not a power generator at this point. It's just a make your savings on your electric bill. So he hasn't done nothing that hasn't already been done, because these units that I'm talking about are basically the equivalents of, let's say I got me a charging system, and I got me a huge battery bank, and I don't run my load directly off of the power source. I run my load off of inverters that are connected to that battery bank. So all I got to do is drain enough energy off the system, which is the grid, to keep my batteries charged up. So all I'm going to have to pay for is whatever energy that battery charger uses. Nothing more. The rest of that on the other side, I'm running on my own inverters. You see what I mean? It ain't no different. So is it free energy? No, because you're actually paying for the energy you got. But it's going to be more efficient because you actually have a surplus of energy stored in that battery bank. And so that inductive load or resistive load, they're not spinning that doggone meter up every time it kicks in. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It'd be better if you had solar panels powering the thing. They need to have something.
Of course, that'd be great. But that, essentially, that's what's going on right here is pretty much Keshi's using that design for that power factor correcting capacitor deal. PFCs for short. Not private first class either.
I remember on the instructions they said to plug it in and then use like low watt, 7 watts, 5 watt little light bulbs at first, and then the nanoparticles would start coating your wires and the drop in resistance would because of the nanoparticles would help things go out. And then after about a month, you're up on regular small loads, maybe refrigerator or whatever. And by the third month, when you're supposed to have made that third payment, if you don't believe or you have a bad intention, it won't work. So he's got all your money now because it's the third month, and all of a sudden, yeah, it doesn't work. Well, you must have had bad intentions, or you didn't pay that last payment.
Well, he's figured out a whole bunch of different ways in which to cover himself whenever it doesn't work. Like to say, well, he can always say
he's an artist. He's an artist.
You hung it up wrong, or yeah, you did it wrong.
Yeah, he's an artist to calling people stupid and idiots.
Yeah,
that it didn't work for. Come on, man.
Well, anyway, that's part of weeding through the whole truth of everything out there. And that's why I say to everybody, if there's ever any time somebody's trying to sell you an alternative or free energy device, don't open your wallet. I mean, if you do and you lose, then, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, but, you know, you gotta be wise about this stuff, because there's shysters out there trying to sell you stuff. And essentially what Keshi's doing is trying to sell you something that's already in existence that you could go out, and I would venture to say that it's a whole heck of a lot cheaper to buy from these folks over here, this unit, and put one in every room and run your resistive and inductive loads off of that. And that will reduce your electric bill because the it's a buffer between your, it's not a direct connection to the deal. It stores a little bit of energy in the capacitor and makes it run more efficiently. You see what I mean there, buddy?
Yeah, I do. And I've seen these other ones from a Tesla Power. They had the deal where it would raise your voltage slightly and your raise your frequency up like 3 or 4 times to make it more efficient. You'd get your money savings that way.
Yeah, well, there's tons of different ways to ensure that your doggone energy usage goes down as far as how much you're actually having to pay for. And you're not cheating the power company because you're paying for what you got. Now, this brings me back to a story from way, way, way back. There was this particular individual who built a generator that literally plugged into the wall. All right, and it only ran off 110 volts AC. But it put out a massive amount of energy out the other side. So what he was doing was, he was using 110 volts AC and running the rest of his house off of his generator. Well, they tried to sue him for it. They tried to say he was stealing electricity because he was running an entire house off the equivalence of one wall outlet. All right, well, when it all finally came down to going to court, they couldn't get him for stealing electricity because he hadn't modified anything at the meter, anything, it was no device connected to try to cheat the power company, and he was paying for every bit of electricity that he was using that came from the power grid.
From the grid, right.
Yeah, so however, somehow or another, somebody got to him behind the scenes and either offered him a whole lot of cash or threatened him, and you haven't heard about the device since. But we've talked about how you could actually build that particular device. Just what's going on right here, you know. If you got a transformer that will charge up a battery bank, and it'll keep that battery bank charged up, and you could run your power off of that battery bank, and only power that you need is what it takes to run off of that wall socket, that one wall socket.
Right.
You could literally take any gasoline generator out there, and, you know, it wouldn't even have to be a high watt or high amperage generator. Just be able to run, a decent, electric motor to drive a transmission that would in turn drive a 10K or 12K generator head, and then from that point on, you run whatever it is you want off of that. Could you imagine how much more efficient that generator would be?
Oh, heck yeah.
It wouldn't have to work near as hard. It'd be basically the equivalence of running like a 150-watt light bulb.
Yeah. I tell you what, as far as Keshi goes, man, it's like dunce.
Yeah.
You know, we could sit there and give him the same insults of intelligence that he gave and probably be a heck of a lot more accurate than he was.
Yeah.
Especially, it's also, it shows the lack of intelligence when you're sitting there trying to talk to an intelligent audience and gain your fame and popularity, and when you're calling them idiots. So, I mean, everybody's proved, and he must have known that people were going to prove that he was wrong and his stuff doesn't work and all that stuff. So instead of being thought a fool and remaining silent, he spoke up and removed all doubt in front of the whole world. That shows me an extreme lack of intelligence.
Well, I watched...
I'll tell you something else. Robert Searle's technology. Now, there's something that produced a phenomenal output and anti-gravity. He got with the ham operators across the UK, and they flew this flying saucer that he built with his Searle technology all over the place. So the military decided, well, let's see how fast this thing goes. And they put helicopters up there to track it. Well, come to find out, the helicopters couldn't catch it. They lost track of it and asked where it was, and he says, too late, it's already here at the base.
Huh.
So, yeah, I'd say that's a lot of power. There's a man that went to jail. They said he was stealing electricity and all that kind of stuff. Basically, what they put, they did the same thing to him that they did to Tesla and to, what's his name? John Hutchinson. Right. Pretty much the same thing they do when they make a new law or do something behind your back. They got your eyes somewhere else. Misdirection. They invited John Hutchinson over across seas to be honored. And, and so while he was gone, they went and stole all his stuff. The same thing with Nikola Tesla. They took all his notes. And the same thing with John Searle. They kept him in jail as long as they freaking could in order to dismantle and get the lady that owned the property and everything to get rid of all his stuff, just to take him down. Why? Because it worked.
Well, I'm back on the whole Keshi deal right there.
Hey, they didn't even put Keshi in jail.
I watched hours and hours and hours and hours of his meetings, his knowledge seeker stuff. And I watched him scribble and babble on forever. And every time somebody asked him a question, he would give him a non-answered question/nutcase kind of answer. And so I don't know why anybody even follows them anymore, but they do. And unfortunately, they could have went to the store and bought something that was already on the market for a heck of a lot cheaper and saved themselves a hassle. But either way, regardless of all that, going back on what you were talking about, how all these different people out there who have come up with alternative energy devices, such as Stan Myers driving around in '70s in the late '70s with a doggone car, a dune buggy that ran on water. That technology's out there, and there are companies out there who make hydrogen generators. It's not mainstream, but it is out there. There were wood gasifiers back during the World War II. When they were having problems getting fuel for their trucks, they would burn wood gas.
Speaking of Stan Myers. Well, they knew his technology worked, and they offed him. After he got so many patents around the world, couldn't get his U.S. patent, they decided to get rid of him because they knew his stuff worked. But here's the controversial question that runs through the back of my mind. What happened to his dune buggy? What happened to the water spark plugs?
His brother got it.
Look, if somebody dies, that doesn't mean their vehicle turned up missing either.
His brother's got it.
Oh, his brother has it?
Yeah, his brother still has the technology. His brother just hasn't got out there in mainstream because probably for the same reason what happened to Stan.
So, you say he keeps getting these men in black suits coming over while he's eating dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, though, the whole thing right there, and going back to Galen Windsor, nuclear scare scam, and all this stuff out there, the technology has been around forever and a day. We all know the only reason why this technology ain't mainstream, it isn't because that basic science doesn't prove that it's valid. I mean, for Pete's sake, they were using steam generation way back before, I think it even goes back to the 1600s, and maybe even further than that. But
the Stirling process is the oldest.
Yeah, Stirling engine.
They opened them big heavy gates that took several soldiers and guards and Roman guards and stuff. They used the Stirling process to open and close the gates because it was a lot of work for a lot of people to move them gates. That was a Stirling, basically the Stirling principle, part of a Stirling engine. They had a box that was filled with air, and they put, and that was up here on like this altar thing, and when they lit the fires, the air expanded, went down in this container that had water in it. It would put air in that container, thus displacing the water to like a bucket, and that would pull the ropes that were wrapped around the posts of the gate and open the gates. As long as that water was there, those gates would stay open. As soon as the fire went out, ritualistic fire went out, they'd put it out, the air would cool, which would put a vacuum and suck the air out of that thing, out of that container, which would suck the water back up out of the bucket.
Well,
the gates would close. That was one cycle of a Stirling principle.
Back in the days, whenever they had like a huge boulder and they needed this boulder out of the way, they'd build a massive fire up around that doggone thing, get that rock red hot, and then turn around and shoot some cold water on it and shatter that rock into small pieces. So,
make a heck of a lot of steam in the process.
Yeah, necessity is the mother of invention. But all this stuff out there is technology that is readily available and has been available for a long time. Folks just got to understand that the system out there don't want you to be energy independent. They don't want that because it don't make them money and it don't make them tax money. So, whenever I talk about, suppressing of technology, and everybody's all, well, what are they really suppressing, they obviously aren't paying attention. The basic science says that water is hydrogen and oxygen. Everybody who's on an oxygen tank will tell you that they don't allow no smoking around them, and there's a reason why. Because oxygen's flammable. And anybody who ever researched the Hindenburg understands why it wasn't a good idea to use hydrogen instead of helium. So there's two small examples of how powerful those two separate molecules are, hydrogen and oxygen. They'll both burn. And one of them's a little bit more volatile. Together, it's water.
Right. Now, they use another property. The car passes through the mountains. They drill the holes just like before you stick the dynamite in. Or find a crack, and they just pour water in it just before it freezes, and then it would freeze, and the expansion of the water would sit there and carve the rock away.
Yeah.
That's very efficient. That's free energy. Just let it get cold.
Well,
I think that's India. No, that ain't India. One of a third world country, I believe, anyway.
Like I said, where there's a will, there's a way. Hydraulic pressure, you'd be amazed at how much stuff you can lift with hydraulic pressure and a positive displacement pump. There's several different types of pumps out there. The positive displacement pump is a pump that basically works like gears. Whatever comes through that thing ain't going back the other way. Ain't no way. So if you keep putting pressure on something, eventually it's going to pop. Well, that's why you got these cranes and stuff that use hydraulics, because they use a positive displacement pump in there that forces that pressure in there, and then at some point it has a relief valve that will allow the fluid to go back in the opposite direction so that you can lower it back down. Otherwise, it's going to go up there and stay up there until it pops.
Right.
Anyway, weeding through all the different craziness out there as far as energy efficiency and what's fact and what's fiction. When I watched that doggone video, Nuclear Scare Scam, I got to thinking about this whole process, and I remembered everything they told me back in school, that if an atomic bomb went off, you wouldn't be able to go in there for hundreds, if not thousands of years. It'd be radioactive. There's people living in the two first pots where an atomic bomb went off today, and it ain't been 100 years.
Right. There's animals thriving and plant life, and basically it just changes the molecular form of all of that stuff, and that radiation disappears a lot faster than they'd say.
Well,
they're telling like 2,000 years or something. Yeah. Not.
There's a lot of radiation in this world, and radiation, just because the word itself sounds like, you know, you got to have a biohazard suit, but one of those radioactive suits and a Geiger counter to make it from point A to point B safely without getting fried. But the way that they use it is just, in my mind, it's just flat out stupid. You're going to refine some natural radiation into a highly radioactive rod. You're going to put this rod down in the water. You're going to boil the water. So if you didn't do anything at all after that point, then the water would boil away until it flashed into steam, and then the thing would get so hot it'd melt itself. So what they did was they made some control rods that would absorb the ions being released by the radioactive rods. And so these were set up to hang from an electromagnet. And this electromagnet would stay on as long as the power was on. But for emergency purposes, it was set up so that if the power in the nuclear power plant was to go out, then it would automatically drop those rods down into the radioactive rods in between them to shut down the reaction. And so the water couldn't, you know, boil away and overheat and blow up have a hydrogen explosion, essentially. And I'll never forget, I heard this.
You don't turn radiation into electricity.
Well, hold on.
Either you boil the water for steam and run it through a steam turbine, which is less efficient, Or you got Stirling engines out here like our nuclear power plant has out there in Cherokee or Chesapeake or I forget what the heck they call this place out here. But, it's Stirling engines out here, no steam.
Yeah, before we get too far away and I lose this thought, I never forget when I started listening to the alternative community go into panic mode about how 10 of the control rods fell down into the reactor. And I'm like, are you serious? You people are freaking out because control rods fell down into the reactor. Do you even know?
The only thing that'll do is cool it off.
Yeah, I said, do you even know what the control rods are for? They are supposed to fall down into the reactor. So at the very least, if only 10 of these fell down in there, at the very least, all you did was turn down the heat. You made the reaction less efficient, less dangerous. So they were all in panic mode. Oh no, 10 control rods fell down in the reactor. Oh, we're all going to die. The sky's falling. No, you're not going to die. You just ain't going to get as much electricity out of it because it's not going to generate as much heat.
Yeah, usually a meltdown at a nuclear power plant is not due to how much radiation is in there.
It's due to ran out of water.
That's right. It's the flow of the cooling water. The Three Mile Island incident, I've heard many different forms, but my brother worked for Brown and Root during the construction, and he worked in the paint department. He was head of the paint department. Now, you got a primer that goes on the inside of the reactor and everything, and then they got this other kind of primer that you put on with a thick glove and a radiation suit. It's radioactive, and it's pink, and they... He didn't remember the name of it, but it was basically that they called it Pink Death. And you had to spread it on so many mils thick and evenly by hand with gloves. And basically, the other part of the paint crew did not do their job in priming or roughing the walls up enough. This Pink Death, after being heated and dried after a while, started to crack and dry up and not stick, because it had nothing to keep it from shrinking. It wasn't bonded to the walls properly. And these chips would fall off, and what they did was clog the drain. And he says, that's what caused Three Mile Island.
Yeah, because you couldn't take that heat away.
Yeah, chips of this secondary primer and thick anti-radiation leak Pink Death paint all chipped and fell off and clogged the drain.
Well, they take depleted uranium and they put it in cooling ponds for 10 years until it depletes even farther, and then they can put it into the ground. Well, the only thing that's going on there is when you first made the radioactive rods for the nuclear reactor is you took and you spun them through centrifuges and you took out all the impurities and kept the highly radioactive parts, and then you put them into a ceramic rod, which made it really seriously highly radioactive. It's hot. It really is hot. It would burn you because it's so radioactive. But once it gets down to the point where it's no longer keeping the water temperature up high enough to boil it into steam, it gets to a point where it's just warming the water. It's not turning it into, getting it hot enough to turn it into steam. So with that said, it's classified now as waste. And so you take those rods out and you put them down in a cooling pond. You leave them there for 10 years until they get less radioactive. And then from that point, you store them in containers and bury them under the ground. And it's that. That's that. But even when they're under the ground, they're still radioactive. And there's still energy to be gathered up from there. So the question is, instead of taking those doggone things and bury them under the ground, because they're still going to continue to release energy, use that lower amount of heat to produce Yeah, even more electricity. You see what I mean? You know, you got to get it, build them to be super hot to boil the water into steam. But that doesn't mean the energy release stops, because I can't remember what the half-life of uranium is, but it's quite a long time.
Yeah, and then it takes even longer for that next half-life.
Yeah, but either way, the doggone energy, you're sitting on the world's proof of free energy, because there's radioactive dumps everywhere. And they bury it down in barrels and concrete so far under the ground that nobody can get their hands on it. And I don't think it's for safety reasons. Because if it's not hot enough to boil water, then it's not going to boil you. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of stories out there about how this radioactivity destroys your doggone your cell structures and your DNA. And so
yeah,
that's why...
Just like microwave frequencies running through the air, changing people's DNA and all that crap.
Well...
Sustained. Yeah.
If Chernobyl was such a bad deal, then why did they allow that one guy, the river monster hunter guy, to go out there and go fishing?
Well, the thing is, all that still winds up in your water supply. And, I mean, you know, anybody thinks that's any different, then they wouldn't do that, because that's harmful to you. Then why do they allow all these dangerous chemicals to go into the water that they do fracking with?
But I don't think...
And now your water supply is all messed up, and you got earthquakes, and all this is supposed to be sealed and separate from each other. Everywhere they do fracking, they have earthquakes. Why? Because of the pressure difference, and also now you got water that's supposed to have stuff in it to seal it, dissolving the grain of earth and sand and everything underneath, so everything's shifting. Well, here's another deal. When they drill an oil well, when they get down, they finally get to the water table, they stop there and they put a seal there, and then they run the pipe down, measure how long that is, and they install a pipe through the water aquifer. And at the other end, when it starts drilling into the rock, there's supposed to be another seal. This is supposed to keep the oil out of the water and keep that pocket of water pure and without anything else. So now it goes down, it goes through the next deal of rock, and it goes through the artesian wells. Then they go down even farther, and they finally get to their oil. And they got seals at all the water spots there, where they... with a piece of pipe between it to keep the water and the oil separate. Unlike what happened in the Gulf, where those seals failed. Who's going to... Now, these things are supposed to be inspected. How do they get somebody to go down into the ground that deep to see if the thing is leaking, and how would they know? So, you know, that's a little controversial there. Now, if you're going to bury this doggone radioactive waste... Or you're going to do fracking with all the dangerous chemicals, and they have to put seals in there as well, and all that kind of stuff. But what happens when the earthquake hits?
Well,
I'm sorry, there ain't nothing sealed. Nothing seals. And they're putting these dangerous chemicals in the water that really don't even need to be there. All you're trying to do is put water to replace gas so that the gas can come up and they can get it and take it. There's no need for that, putting all that stupid stuff in the water. There's no need at all. Matter of fact, it'd be much better, because I'd really like to not have to boil my water or put it through a reverse osmosis to get drinking water like it's supposed to come out of an artesian well.
The whole thing that people...
So I don't think the radiation... I think burying the radiation is another way to contaminate our water. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the whole thing about the radiation, and this is my understanding of how it's actually functioning. Just like the microwave oven, it sends out a short, fast wave, and since water is a dipole molecule, if it's in the general vicinity of that depleting uranium, then it's going to heat up. So you're going to raise the water temperature. That's the worst portion of the deal. You're raising the water temperature. And at certain points, you raise the water temperature up high enough, you separate the oxygen from the hydrogen, and you risk the hydrogen explosion. That's what happened at Fukushima. They had a hydrogen explosion, a couple of them. And that's what happened at Chernobyl, the same exact thing. They had a hydrogen explosion. It got too hot, blew up. Anything's going to blow up if you pressurize it. But as far as the radioactivity transferring to the water to make the water become radioactive, I don't see where that's going to be a long-term issue unless you have a continuous flow of radioactivity going on. You see what I'm saying?
Right. So it's kind of bury stuff.
It's kind of like when you boil the water. The water, you wouldn't want to stick your hand in boiling water for obvious reasons. It's going to scald you. But after it cools down, then it's no longer dangerous again. So I think where the biggest danger of any radioactive material comes from the heat. Or like Galen Windsor was talking about, you take this chemical and you mix it with that chemical and you get a blue flash, which essentially is nuclear fission, and that blue flash sends out all kinds of heat and gamma rays and stuff that, you know, will kill you instantly. But as far as just regular radioactivity, I remember one time, I think it was Coltis or somebody was talking to me about how they lived where there was a whole lot of uranium around. There's like uranium mines around. And I asked them how long you've been living there, you know, and their whole life they've been living there. So they was wondering whether or not it was safe to drink the water. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
If you've been living there all your life and you're not dead and you don't have a history of everybody else who's lived there in that particular area not being dead, how many hundreds of thousands of years has the doggone land been there? How many people has lived on there? And how many people had died from the natural uranium that was actually in the dirt? It's only
well,
when you...
how long is a stupid steel bear... Let's put this. You put a steel fence post in, or a signpost, and you put it in cement. All right, once after a while, it gets a little space as a little rust allows the water to get into there. If you put that straight into dirt, the water there would rot and rust that pole away in very little time.
Yeah, even concrete will
break
down after a while.
Okay, so they got this thing in a steel barrel, and they're going to bury it. How long before the radioactive waste gets into the water supply? I'm not talking the radiation, the radioactive waste.
Well, if it dropped right straight down into the deal, and it was radioactive waste because of the fact that the rods weren't good enough to boil water at the plant, and so they put them in cooling ponds for 10 years to cool them down, let them deplete a little bit more, and at that point was only able to basically warm the water. By the time that actually falls down into the water, it's going to barely warm the water, because the energy being released. Now there's certain different materials out there that you don't want mixed in your water, such as like in the microwave oven, there's a magnetron inside there, and there's two different materials that they use. There's one that has a pink ceramic on it that you don't want crushed into dust and have that ingested. That's why they moved over to the material that was the white material that's in there. I can't remember what the name of that material is that's in the pink ones, but you don't want to break those up, and if you handle them, you want to make sure you wash your hands real good so you don't get none of that basically inside, if you see what I'm saying.
I wonder if that's pink death. It was radioactive.
Well, nothing would surprise me, but when we hear about all this stuff, about all the radioactive dangers and stuff, and all the energy crises of the world and all that kind of stuff, they take depleted uranium and they make bullets out of it, and then they take these bullets over and fight wars with it, because these bullets will penetrate armor because of the density of them. So, why would you want to be slinging that stuff around, man? If it was going to hit a tank, puncture that tank, wouldn't that, like, put a cloud of dust inside that tank? And then at some point when somebody go to clean out whatever's left of it, that dust get out into the environment, or even before it ever even makes it into the tank, maybe shatters some of it and puts that dust out into the environment. Where are you at now? You understand the question I'm asking?
Yeah.
It's still radioactive.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's look at this. You got a little Stirling engine, you put a candle under it, and it's good enough to run it. But can you heat your stew? No. But you go to a flame from the stove, which would burn your little, Stirling engine up, probably, or maybe not. And you can heat that pot of stew up. Well, now you got a 55-gallon drum. How much of a flame are you going to need to warm that water or heat it? What they buried at that waste there, I'm pretty sure, you know, they're looking at a huge power plant. They're trying to boil a lot of water.
Yep.
Well, if it only makes it warm, then why not take that older stuff and use it to feed a smaller reactor?
Yeah. Why
same
not?
Size, same thing as a smaller body of water. And you got the same amount of power and heat. And I look at it in parallel to a Fresnel lens. Okay, now you're gonna heat a small kiddie pool up with a Fresnel lens. But the Fresnel lens shades the whole pool to make that one spot hot. You have no more power in that water. It's going to be the same temp. There's no difference. Because basically what it is it's how much heat you have and how much of a focal point or a small area.
Have tons and tons of radioactive waste, even though it's not warm enough to boil water, you actually have more material, more mass going on. And if, let's say, hypothetically...
It'll power a smaller reactor. Well, yeah, pretty much the same thing.
Let's say
the surface area of the Fresnel lens can, per square meter, is supposed to have, I think, like 1,000 watts. Okay, if your pool is only 1 meter, guess what? You're still only putting 1,000 watts worth of heat into your pool. Power in equals power out. The only problem is you have 1,000 watts is going to 4,000 degrees in one spot, and you're getting a flash boil. It's still not heating your pool as much as just the open sun would have done it to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, same thing with how much power you got. How much water are you trying to heat with what you got? So what? It won't boil 30,000 gallons.
Well, have you heard about the deal up in the St. Louis, Missouri, about the there's an underground fire that's been burning for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And why they haven't been able to put it out is beyond me, because there's methods that they could pump CO2 down in there and put the fire out if they want to. Alright? But they're not. It's still burning. But apparently this particular underground fire is right close to a doggone underground nuclear waste facility.
Right.
And so you got people out there talking about how, oh no, there's this fire and it's getting close to the doggone nuclear waste and all this kind of stuff, and they're thinking they're going to have an issue. Well, the fire ain't going to do nothing to those rods. The fire ain't going to cause no nuclear explosion. If anything, all it's going to do is heat them up and make them turn blacker than what they are now. That's it. The only issue you would have would be if that fire was to dry out the dirt in the general vicinity, and you know how dirt, whenever it ain't have moisture in it, will have cracks in it, and water would be able to seep down inside that deal if the containment unit wasn't sealed up. And then when that water interacts with the doggone radioactive material, would get warm. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, the people out there panicking because 10 radioactive rods fell down into the center of the doggone core don't even understand basic science. They don't understand what the doggone control rods are for. They're magnetically coupled to an electromagnet, set up and designed so that whenever you could actually raise and lower these, like you got, let's say you got a 3-foot rod that is highly radioactive and you got 3-foot control rods. If you take that 3-foot control rod and you put it down in the water between the doggone radioactive rod, the control rod collects up the ions being released by the depletion of the uranium and slows down the reaction, which means your water don't heat up as fast. You put it all the way down and the reaction comes to a halt because the control rods are absorbing all the energy being released by the radioactive rods. So only by falling down in there, the only thing that happened was it shut the power down a little bit.
Right.
There was no danger of an explosion or anything like that, but people panicked because they didn't understand how this actually functions.
Yeah, the rod falling down into the reactor is no more dangerous than standing in front of the Fresnel lens and blocking the sunlight.
But that fear is enough to keep people away from those dumps. That fear that you've been taught since the day that you were told about radioactive material is enough to keep you away from it. That fear is why everybody's afraid of a nuclear explosion. Now, the hydrogen bomb, the nuclear thermonuclear devices out there, their destructive power is unimaginable compared to what they dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But the imminent danger comes from the initial explosion when fission takes place and the highly charged radioactive particles being released instantaneously, the heat from that, the blinding rays that come out that if you were happening to looking at the flash itself, you'd had your doggone eyeballs pretty much burn out of your skull. If you go up to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, they have a museum up there, and you can literally see where they have a piece of a wall where there are what it looks like is shadows on the wall, but what it really is how somebody was literally incinerated and glued to the wall. It's insane. That's how hot that initial burst was. And so if you got an atmosphere full of hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, that initial blast would literally ignite all the atmosphere in the general vicinity. You see what I'm talking about? But
right.
The further you get away from that, they always talk about radioactive fallout. Now, right at the point when this happens, and the mushroom cloud comes up and all the crud and dust is up in the air, it's mixed with particles that are still highly charged. The further you get out away from that, the further you get away from the danger zone, the less likely you are to be affected by it. You see what I mean? There were people that were alive when I was over there in Japan back in the 80s that were alive during the time when those bombs went off. How's that possible?
It just wasn't in the high concentration of it.
Some of them were in the general vicinity close enough where they got some serious burns on their body.
Yeah. What about that guy, 72-year-old guy sitting there drinking pure plutonium and swimming around in the pool and just, you know?
That's Galen Windsor.
Yeah. He's still alive.
Yeah, so, you know, there you go. That, fact or fiction, you have to sort through the whole doggone mess. I don't believe there's an energy crisis. I don't believe there's ever been an energy crisis. I don't believe that fossil fuels are dangerous. You know, if you're worried about it, if fossil fuels are really seriously dangerous, then why in the heck are we still using them? And even if we are going to use them, why aren't we using them so incredibly efficient that you don't even need a catalytic converter because you burn up every single bit of that in the combustion cycle? You see what I'm saying?
Most of it, yeah. And I don't know. It's they can meter oil, but they can't meter your free wind turbine and your free solar panel and how much you've used if you don't have a meter on it. And basically, now they're trying to claim the wind. They've already claimed the water. And, you know, you put a wind turbine, oh, you're using our wind. Come on, man. It's like when you're a kid, you sit there and, gee, one of these days we're going to wind up having to pay for air. And that sounded silly to us. We were all going, no, no, no. Now, because you breathe, they want to give you a carbon tax.
Yeah.
When they put more carbon into the air with their stupid things that they do than anybody, and you can't collect your rainwater, oh, that's our water. The problem is that they can't meter things that you need.
That's the only thing.
That's the reason why you're still on oil, because they want to keep it, because that's something they can truck and ship and measure and sell for a certain price. But they can't meter your air.
There's a video out there called the Fuelless Heater. No fuel, no gas. It's just essentially an electric motor turning a rotor that has a bunch of holes in there that creates a man-made water hammer that heats water up rapidly.
Right, because it slams it on the outer circumference as it flows.
I'll click on this video and try to stop it before the doggone commercial.
It uses centrifugal force to make the weight of the water... the speed of the water hit the sides really hard with a lot of pressure behind it.
Yeah, I'm gonna
spin it with the motor and using centrifugal force. I think there is a from all the things I've studied on many different areas, I think the centrifugal force has a lot more free energy in it than people think. I'm talking over unity. I believe centrifugal force has the power. Matter of fact, I designed something when I was a kid, and it was a little generator. It had like I did a fan fold. You know, you take your paper, you bend it this way, and then that way, and then this way, and then that way, and I turned it into a ring that attached to a shaft, and on the fan fold, on the outer edge, I put magnets. And the thing here is you spin it around and it starts to go out like a skirt, you know, when you're like a ballet dancer when she spins and her skirt goes out, you know. The thing here is it get up to a certain speed, and as you're starting to draw energy off it, it would slow the rotor down and bring the magnets, the magnets would drop back down because of the weight of them and not having as much centrifugal force because it's not spinning as fast. It'd be an automatically adjust how close the magnets are and everything according to how much power is being put out, and you'll still use the same power going in. And that was my idea, and I figured that another one that I did that I sat there and thought of and started putting together and never really tested was one where the magnets were on strings themselves, and if they got too close to the magnets and you were drawing too much, basically the magnets wouldn't swing outward towards the core. They'd wrap back up on the spool a little bit because they had that resistance. So pretty much using the centrifugal force to get the magnets to go out farther was pretty much the concept. How big the diameter of the central shaft had to be to get that to adjust just right, you know, I never tested out.
Well, there's a process called cavitation that all it does is spin water rapidly. And
yeah.
The way that your microwave oven, all we're talking about here is you're literally shaking a water molecule so fast that you're creating friction, which in turn creates heat and cooks your food or heats your water, either way. So if you took in consideration cavitation and the video that I just posted over there to superchat.html at shazizradio.com, let's say you spin the water with an electric motor, and you're able to produce steam, And you've used that steam pressure to create a cavitation effect inside of doggone water. You could cause that doggone water to heat up rapidly. I mean, extremely rapidly. And we know that heat, steam expands multiple times. Ah! I'm going to have to take a pause, man.
Put a good tune on that.
Hold on a second. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Sorry about that. Yeah, you can always tell an operation's a low budget whenever they got a doggone phone ringing in a studio environment, don't have a closed off deal, so you know, don't have no answering service or anything like that. Anyway, we're talking about all kinds of stuff and alternative energy and how to weed through all the different things out there in this world, fact or fiction. It's just sometimes the hypocrisy of this world out there is just mind-blowing. You know, where the line between real and fake and fact and fraud and all that kind of stuff is, is pretty much for up to you to figure that out. But there's every single thing, every single answer to every single question to resolve all the issues that we got out there in this world is right there at our fingertips. Now, if I hadn't figured out from my little setup right here, and other people around the world can figure it out, it's all about how we get this all implemented. You know, if radioactive material isn't as dangerous as they said it was, somebody have to ask the question, why? Why'd they even say it? If the planet isn't doomed to overheat because of carbon, then why are they doing all that what they're doing? Every single conspiracy out there and every single suppression of technology or other good ideas all falls back to the same doggone thing, money and power. They want to make money, and they want to stay powerful. The best way to stay powerful and to make all the money is to have all the knowledge, not let people know what's what. You know, there's people out there spending their time worried about whether the earth is round or whether the earth is flat, and there's people out there worried about all kinds of things, everything under the sun. There's a doggone Planet X coming around to blast us, or a big giant death meteor, or there's a mega earthquake or mega volcano, or all this kind of stuff there, the global warming / climate change / climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week whenever the numbers just don't add up. Like, for instance, I've got a couple inches of global warming on my lawn now that I'm going to have to sweep off of my doggone car whenever I decide I want to go somewhere. So, in my instance, where I'm burning firewood and running electric heaters and stuff like that, I could use all the global warming I could get my hands on. So, those of you out there that have some of that global warming, could you send it over my way? That's what I'm saying. But either way, you know, common sense, folks. There's tons of technology out there. We got to get the people to the table who can actually do the construction of the devices that we talked about. Now, I got a mechanical brilliance about me. I can understand how things function. And I can even design up how it needs to be built. But as far as my meticulousness, construction skills?
Yeah.
No, I can't. You know, I watched you, the very first video I ever saw of yours, Muddy, was a Stirling engine, and you were, like, meticulous about how you built it. I even watched your actual flux wind generators. I watched how you built it.
Yeah, if you aren't meticulous about it, you're going to have leaks here and there. And some people say, oh, yeah, that ain't the best engine. No, I tried to tell them, no, it's not the best engine. It's not meant to be. It's made to go through the series where I could show you where all the mistakes are that you're making.
Yeah, the basic concept.
If I made zero mistakes, this one would run. It wasn't supposed to be the best one, you know?
The basic concept, the principle. You know?
Right, building skills.
But those guys out there and gals that have really good skills, artistic skills, as far as actually producing products, you know, building things. I mean, not only does it look good, it's clean, it's functional, but if you're building it out of junk and you got a duct tape and baling wire together, it's going to have some wobbles. It's going to have some flaws. So we need a crew together that can bring their tools together, can bring their knowledge together, their skills, and literally we could build using all these concepts that we talked about on alternative energy and such to literally build, at the very least, the most efficient power source in the history of time. You know, it's already there. You know, but what hinders the process is Keshi's out there trying to relabel something that's already in existence and calling it free energy when it's not. And when people prove him wrong, it puts a blight or a black eye on the alternative energy community and makes it look like everybody's out there trying to steal somebody's money or something.
Yeah.
Trying to scam somebody. And so that's why, you know, that's why you heard my phone ring in the background over here on my radio show, because I don't got no studio where I have somebody in the other room pushing buttons and keeping everything leveled up and answering phone calls. Excuse me. No, my phone's right there. And there's a live mic right there.
Yeah, this isn't Coast to Coast AM where they got somebody screening the calls to find out if it's, you know, a wrong number or if the guy's actually serious or if he's going to be saying something stupid on the air. They have to weed them out. Oh, it's this is like B-grade movie.
Yeah, this is a real deal. This is average Joe, a real guy out here, trying to come up with real solutions. Trying to invite you to the table so that you can step up to the microphone and tell people your research and stuff. This is how we get it done. This is the only way we're going to get it done. The platform is here. You got to use it. It's as simple as that. And if you don't use it, then you really can't complain about the way the society is. I mean, we could take the internal combustion engine, and we can make that internal combustion engine so energy efficient, so amazingly, it would use so much, so little fuel that it would just be ludicrous.
Now, right, but that, you put a big old plasma arc in there, so about the size of a golf ball, instead of that itty-bitty spark, and for the same amount of fuel you use to idle a lawnmower, you'll have that thing racing to you'll have that thing racing like you gave it a whole lot more gas.
Yeah, because instantaneously, all that fuel's going to burn. It's not going to be spitting out waste fuel down there that you need a catalytic converter to re-burn it. It's going to be burning at its most efficient rate with the most efficient oxygen air mixture, fuel air mixture, and it will do exactly what... You know, you could run an internal combustion engine off of steam if you knew what you were doing.
Yeah. You know, man, they had that deal of cash for clunkers because of the carbon footprint of these old junkers and jalopies, as they call them. Okay. Did you ever notice that when the price of gas gets real low, like right now, they start advertising these V8 motors and these big SUVs and Humvees?
Oh, yeah.
And after everybody buys them, then the price of the fuel goes up. Now, with that little bit of sacrifice, they sell even more.
Huh.
And that, you know, that's what happens. They aren't looking to save you anything. The cash for clunkers, now, we look at the new cars, they got so many sensors, so many things that have to be installed and running on there. And that tells me, just kind of like computers, man, if you got too many stupid programs on it, the thing's going to run slow anyway. So they say, well, okay, your computer from last year is obsolete. You need something that's got this many gig of RAM and this speed. And as soon as they do, they start writing programs that are huge.
Yeah.
Now, I take these old... I remember the old computers that worked on GW Basic and Basic 86 and Basica. The old Commodore 64s and Amigos 128s. Now, I'm about to tell you what.
Don't forget the TRS-80.
It took almost a minute to load a whole program off that cassette tape. But now the computers are so fast, and people are still waiting for their page to load for this, for that. Why? Because it's not about your convenience. It's about what they can sell. You get on your computer, and it's got so many programs on it, and it's got all these viruses and things like that, you're stuck in the same position. Now, if I put an old Basic program on my computer, I can't even get my finger off the button before it's loaded, running, and got an answer.
Yep.
And why not do that? We want faster stuff. We want stuff that does more. Why do we have to clog it up with a bunch of extra stupid security data?
Well, the reality of the whole deal is the same reality why the energy community puts out inefficient appliances. And you think these all folks ain't intertwined. They are. They are definitely intertwined. The auto industry has already built electric cars. And they were good ones.
Right. Tesla had one.
Yeah, but they pulled them out and smashed them up. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just keep it around? Because, I mean, it's already built, you know. And the people who were driving them loved them. And now the electric car is making a comeback. But, you know, the fuel industry wouldn't want you to have an electric car out there. unless they had some sort of alternative plan up their sleeves. They're going to still be able to sell you tires for that electric car, because rubber is made from petroleum.
Right.
So, and the plastic, still made from petroleum. There's a lot of petroleum products that are made from what's left over in the crude oil when they take out the gas portion of it. So, either way...
You want to talk about efficiency, Bubba? I'll tell you what. These internal combustion engine vehicles running around only get 5% of the power in the piston to the reel-reel due to frictions and going through one, you know, through the transmission and all the joints it's got to make through the pumpkin and back out to the rear wheels. The torque, you're only getting 5% of what was generated inside that piston. That's number one. Now, you've got an alternator on that vehicle to generate electricity for that battery. Your alternator, if you had to put out one horsepower, that would be 746 watts. You start your car, you've got a massive amp, you know, you've seen your cold cranking amp, 760 amps.
Yeah.
It's like, holy moly, times 12, how many watts did you just suck out of your car, out of your battery, to make that engine go
yeah,
and that's a long time, and then the thing fires up. So now people are going to drive for less than 15 minutes or maybe 15 minutes to get to where they're going, and they're going to get out and turn it off again and then start it again. 90% of all the batteries out here never see full charge again after that they're installed into the car. Why? Because that alternator uses electricity from your battery to put the right amount of current through the rotor, which is a coil, and make it an electromagnet that spins in the middle of the stator coils. The stator coils are called stator coils because they are stationary. They don't move, but that rotor does. And it's got brushes, and they put a DC charge through there, and that's how the voltage regulator regulates how much voltage it's going to make, or how much power. The rotation is the amplification of the juice used from the battery. And this system, and also going to steel cores for the coils in the stator, just the steel cores in the stator means that you're going to lose 55% due to lens losses in stator core. And by drawing energy off of your battery to make magnetism so you can have a rotating magnetic field inside your stator cores, which the torque of the motor is going to turn into amperage, you wind up with an alternator that's only 5% efficient. So if I need one horsepower worth of electricity into my battery to take care of starting the car, you're riding around for 45 minutes, or your battery never sees full charge again, just from that. That's if the lights are off. And you also only getting 5% of that gasoline. That's a decimal point of efficiency for your gas.
So we have the technology right now to literally build you can go out and buy a small solar panel, prop it up in your back window, mount it where it ain't going to slide around and become a missile hazard and smack you in the back of the head whenever you ain't looking.
Yeah.
And have a charge controller on that and a cord that will run right up and plug right into your cigarette lighter input. And while you're driving around and the sun's hitting that solar panel, it's going to keep your battery charged up. And your alternator will only kick on when your battery voltage gets down to a certain point. And like you just explained, your battery voltage is already down. So your alternator kicks on right out of the gate because it's drained. It's not up to full charge. And so it's continuously reading that it needs to be charged. So it's continuously keeping that alternator on. If you got that solar panel in the back with a charge controller that's not going to allow your battery to get overcharged, then you can sit there and charge your battery with the sun while it's sitting there at the parking spot. You see what
right,
I mean?
Right, in the parking spot. The worst part here, here's the worst part, man, is if your car is just idling, you're not getting anything until you're above 700 RPM. So at idle, It's not making very much electricity at all. You see, a lot of people have to rev it up when they're going to give you a boost on your car. But the thing is, it's using a lot of electricity from your battery to raise that current up in there because it's not going at faster RPMs. Usually you spin something faster, you get more voltage, but when the car's going smaller, it's sucking more energy off of your battery than it's actually generating. So that's even worse.
Yeah, so when you're in stop-and-go traffic, if you got some sort of solar panel hooked up that's actually putting juice back in, your alternator don't have to work as hard.
That's right, and the cool thing about that is when you go to start your car, now when you go to start your car, it's not going to go it's going to go, you're going to turn the key and you're going to hear boom, and it's running. So therefore you haven't used as much to start your car. Why? Because the battery's charged and it's kicking much, much better.
Well, that's just one little example of how to make that car more efficient. There are also other methods to do it, such as changing the injectors to, instead of squirting a whole bunch of fuel in there, to squirt a atomized fuel inside there. That'll change the efficiency there. There are methods by which you can actually vaporize water and inject water vapor down into the air breather, which will suck down into the intake system to give it more boost. There's so many different ways to make that car so efficient that you wouldn't hardly use that much fuel. So, you don't even have to get off the fossil fuels to do it right. You see what I mean?
Yup. Anyway, the total efficiency for using your car to generate electricity for your battery is 0.0025.
That ain't much.
That's your efficiency. That's way down.
Well, if they had guys like us,
you have to use 25 times. In other words, you need 20 horsepower to make 1 horsepower worth of electricity. And also your engine's got that same loss too, 20 and 20.
If they had guys like us and other individuals out there, there's this guy that makes this, it's air-powered quad, it's like 4 turbines in one that turns a gear. And the RPMs that this guy gets off of this deal with air pressure is amazing. I put a post in a link yesterday, I believe, of this thing. It's turbine power, but he shows you how he actually makes this thing. And it's incredible. Now, if you could take that, like a pneumatic design, and design an engine that would work off of air pressure, you know, or even a transmission for that matter that would work off of air pressure, and the only thing that your motor was there for was to turn a pump that would produce enough air pressure to run that turbine, you could get every bit of torque you wanted out of that car. And the efficiency would be just ludicrous. You wouldn't even have to have, modern-day transmissions. You got to have transmission fluid up in that thing, because if you ain't got transmission fluid up in there, everything get hot and it won't last very long. They have transmission coolers because there's a vortex being built up inside there. It's essentially like that device we were talking about earlier that made the water hammer, you know, the cavitation effect that circulates the liquid until it gets hot. So you got to have a transmission cooler to take the heat away. You got to have a radiator to take the heat off of your engine, off your internal combustion engine. So you got so many doggone losses. If there was ever proof of over-unity, it's in the internal combustion engine, because the internal combustion engine, if you measured up all the losses of everything from vibration to heat and whatever in that doggone deal, you'd find out that that doggone engine, if you did the math, would literally be over unity. Because if you take one thing away from that, such as the radiator or the water pump, that thing will get so hot it will literally destroy itself.
Yeah. You have to have a... check it out. I mean, you've got to have a cooling fan to keep from warping that engine. That's steel.
Yeah.
When you're looking at electronics and they start talking about efficiencies, they're usually talking about dissipation of heat in watts and losses. Your car, man, oh my goodness, man, it's a lot of watts of heat. Matter of fact, I used to take the taxi cab outside, let it run for about 10 minutes, then pull it inside the shop and open the hood, and it would get warmer in there.
So what if you
just
took...
Turn the engine off. You're not making all that exhaust and everything. Man, there's a lot of heat off of that. A lot of heat is wasted in the car.
So what if you took that energy of the lost heat off of the, let's just say the radiator alone. You got a radiator fan. Some cars have two radiator fans in them.
Right.
What if you could take the heat off of that radiator through Peltier elements, where you had like heat sinks on the face, where the wind normally blows through the radiator, the Peltier elements stuck to the radiator, where you got heat sinks on the front that are being air cooled, and the temperature difference would produce enough electricity to run both of those doggone fans. You see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Now your fan's not kicking on, which means your battery's not going to get sucked down as fast, and your alternator won't kick on near as fast. And so you take away that heat from the radiator and put it back into electricity form. Take the heat off of the transmission cooler and do the same exact thing for whatever device that you want to run. You could use the waste heat off the car alone to keep that alternator from ever even kicking on. And a side note is that if your engine's getting hot, the insulation on the alternator's getting hot, and eventually the alternator's going to fail.
Right.
From heat. And so if you can keep that alternator cool and the engine cool, then you're not going to have to change your doggone alternator nearly as much. You see what I mean?
Yep. Exactly.
And the bearings are cool, and the engine's cool, and the alternator's cool, and everything in there, car is cool, it's going to be way, way, way more efficient. If they put guys like you and I and a bunch of these other researchers like Russ from RWG Research and Lead Motor and all these other rimstar.org, Laser Saber, you know, all these different guys out there that had all these little pieces of the puzzle, and we got together and we were like consultants for a car company that wanted to build the most efficient car ever in existence of time, and they paid attention to what we were talking about. We could show them how to build a car that would use so little fuel and have the maximum amount of horsepower and the maximum range for fuel economy in the history of time.
They're not interested in making them fuel efficient because that doesn't waste oil.
Well, yeah. We got oil backed up in barges sitting off the side of the ocean there waiting because they ain't got no place to put it. And there's oil all over the place, and they keep saying we're going to run out of oil, but yet we got a stockpile of oil. And so what's the problem here? Maybe that's why they don't want efficient cars, because they got to get rid of the crud.
Yeah, but you know what? Them cash for clunkers, we started off with a carbon footprint of why they wanted to get the clunkers off. All them gadgets on the new car, one sensor goes out. What happens?
It
sends a message to the computer to change the airflow, to change the fuel mixture, and they run inefficient, and they put out worse than the old clunkers would. On top of that, they have to haul that clunker, and then they have to put a lot of heat to it to melt it all down, plus man hours and work, and they wind up making a bigger carbon footprint than the vehicle would have done if it stayed on the road.
Yep. That's the whole hypocrisy of all of this. This is why I brought up what I brought up. It's why you need to be informed, you need to be educated, you need to pay attention to what's going on out there. You need to be prepared for any just such emergency, because you never know what's going to happen. And if you're out there on the road and your doggone alternator belt kicks off, breaks, then you don't have nowhere to go because you're either not turning your water pump or you're not putting juice back in the battery. So you can only go so far on the energy that's in that battery.
Well, a Volvo has a separate pulley for the water pump. And the cool thing was, we got broke a fan belt to the alternator. Didn't have it, measured it, and you can't just say, I'll guess at this and go to the auto parts store and then go out there and install it. So basically, we went out there and gave it a boost, charged the battery up, and started driving. You go a long ways as long as you're not stepping on your brake or, running your headlights or your stereo or anything like that. Just don't use no other electricity other than what it takes to keep this ignition system running. And basically, you can go a long ways. I mean, it was like a 20-minute drive, and I made it home. And, as soon as I got home, I stuck a solar panel up on that stupid thing, let it charge the battery up, and then, after I came out there and started the engine, I drove to town and got my doggone fan belt, put it on right there at the auto parts store. And I tell you what, that worked real well. Solar panel is a wonderful thing. The alternator on your car, when it's charging your battery, is basically one-third of your horsepower with that 0.0025 efficiency total for the machine itself. Yeah, a solar panel saves you one-third of your horsepower. Your air conditioner is another third, and your automatic transmission is the last third. So, that's pretty accurate when you're talking about thirds. So that also means that if I put a solar panel and a charge controller on my vehicle, that means I'm going to save one-third of my gas mileage. I'm going to get one-third more gas mileage. On top of that, seeing as I'm not dragging a bunch of other friction across my motor and through the system, I wind up getting one-third more horsepower at the same time. So you say one-third and one-third, that means I'm getting two-thirds extra value just by having a solar panel on. It's something. If you have a solar panel, I don't care if it's expensive, get one, put it on your vehicle, buy the charge controller, because that's going to save your battery from going bad from overcharge. But it will pay for itself within the first month. If you figure out how much gas you put in your vehicle, especially if you deliver papers and do things like that, that solar panel is going to more than pay for itself. On top of that, it's going to save you wear and tear and a lot of maintenance and mechanic stuff, because none of the parts inside the engine are taking near the friction that they used to.
Well,
it doesn't have to. The only thing that you'll have to replace is, number one, not your alternator, because it's not being used. I mean, it's still hooked up, but your battery doesn't drop far enough to turn it on. The only other things that you got on there is the air conditioning compressor and your smog pump and your water pump. That's it.
And the car
stereo, I can change them things all day. It's a whole lot better to rebuild the motor.
In the car stereo industry, they have these really awesome capacitors. They're like 500,000 microfarad capacitors.
Yeah, super caps.
Yeah, and they use these things to supplement the doggone energy for the alternator so that the capacitor will carry the load for the stereo so it doesn't drain the battery down. Well, if you took the same concept where you put solar panels in the back window of your car, or even the front, or even on the top of it, and had them, you could custom make your own solar panels to whatever size you want, whatever shape. If you took the same concept and you sacrificed a little bit of your trunk space area and built you a capacitor bank and a battery bank that was actually connected into your battery, your alternator would never kick on. You wouldn't be using enough juice for it to kick on. The voltage has to get down to a certain deal before the regulator will turn that alternator on. And if the alternator ain't coming on, you're saving energy. These are just small examples. The same thing you can do in your house. Putting the bank before the load there and drawing off of the bank instead of the dang load. When you got a financial institution such as a bank and you got a space cushion in there, you can you can have, if you got a fat load of cash in the bank and it only takes you so much to survive, you know, spend a little bit here and there, you got reserve. That's the same thing that happens with energy. You got you an energy bank, you have reserve. You're using the what you need, and the rest of it, you know, you just trickle charge it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Also means that when you get, thing James E. Tollison said a long time ago in his millionaireship thing, you've got to have more money than you need before you need it. Therefore, when things crop up, you have enough money to take care of it, and you can actually break even.
Yep, and that
other than that, it's the same thing.
That extra one-third horsepower that you talked about could come in handy someday to get out of the way.
Yeah, so you got a crazy expense pops up. Guess what? You're not going to have late charges, more late charges, and then your credit cards fall behind because you got more late charges. And having the money up ahead makes a difference. And it's the same thing on your car. You got a part that's going bad. Say you got a tie rod on the front end of your car, and it's starting to go out. Well, it puts stress on your drag link, your steering knuckles, and all that stuff. It puts stress on everything, and it starts wearing your tires. You wear out with a bad tie rod. You can wear out a tire within a few weeks in the taxi cab. So it's much, much cheaper to go spend $15 for that tie rod end and screw it in and then go down the road. If you count how many turns it takes to turn it out, you count the same amount of turns putting it in because it came from the same mold and it goes in. You don't have to have a front end alignment and you don't wind up going through two front tires every 2 weeks, which is a whole lot more than $15. And also that tie rod end, putting stress on the other joints and stuff, wear them out faster. So spending the money now, people say, well, I can't afford to fix that. That's when I speak up and I say, no, you can't afford not to. If you can't afford that part, then you can't afford not to. Go beg or borrow and get it and take care of it.
Well, we're getting down to the wire there, brother, but there's a lot of brilliant stuff going on. If we could actually get the team, the dream team together, like I like to call it, brilliant individuals, we could literally, from start to finish, build a doggone automobile that would be so incredibly efficient that, imagine, you got a car, and you back up to your house, and on the bumper, there's connection that you just pull out and plug it right into your house and leave the car running and go inside.
Right.
And so your car is your power plant. You could take that car out there right now and you could turn that car into a literal power plant. You know what, Muddy? You and I need to do a video. Get Raymond involved and whoever else wants to get involved and show people how to literally turn the car into a power plant.
It'd be nice if they get rid of that regular brush alternator that's only 5%. Go to the opposite, which is 95% efficiency plus with an axial flux, and just let the engine run.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be okay.
So, if you're worried about, like, most internal combustion engines, and we got to speed this up because we're, like, really down to it. If you think about a regular gasoline engine, one of the reasons why you don't want to let a gasoline engine sit there and idle too doggone long is because, number one, it's got a lot of heat to it, and it'll destroy that motor, and the pistons, if they're only going up and down so far, eventually will wear a groove in the cylinder and basically mess the motor up. But if you were taking that heat away from that engine, enough that you aren't breaking down that oil, then that motor won't destroy itself. But if you went to a diesel version where you could actually run biodiesel, or even hydrogen for that matter, the diesel fuel has oil in the fuel that lubricates the cylinders while it's being run.
Right.
And that's why a diesel generator is better for you than a gasoline generator, because the diesel is self-lubricating. But if you if you took an internal combustion engine and you made it so that internal combustion engine would not get hot, you was able to take away that heat. And there's a lot of heat generated by just something as simple as a little 5-horse Briggs & Stratton puts out a ton of waste heat.
Yeah.
And those are air cooled.
What are the main things that go bad on your doggone internal combustion? One, you got the points condenser. You got your coil, you got your plug wires, and you got plugs. Nothing of that is on a diesel engine, and it has a different higher, a much higher compression ratio, which is responsible for igniting it, and also for more efficiency.
Well, there's
diesel's the best way to go.
There's a way to take away a majority of all that electronics and make mechanical timers on the doggone deal. If you actually wanted to do the engineering to it, you know, you could take away the distributor completely, and you could build like a rotary spark gap that would fire those cylinders. You got one single rotor that is firing all eight cylinders, and you don't have no distributor cap to go bad. You don't have no timing belt to break. You see what I'm saying? It's just gear driven. So where there's a will, there's a way, folks. And with that said, you got anything last you need to say there, buddy? Because like we're pushing it right now.
You just go right ahead. Don't worry about it. If I had anything to say, it'd probably be using a rather than going through transmission and all this and the spider gears in the back and losing all that efficiency. I take a weed eater motor, direct drive to an axial flux, and I'd have all I need as long as I'm charging my battery.
Yeah, if you took the transmission out of the equation and run an electric motor, you'd have all the torque you needed. They got some
automatic transmissions. One third of your gas mileage and power loss. And if you didn't have that and it was a direct drive, you'd be doing great. That's why the electric motors, one on each wheel on these hybrids, just blows the gas mileage right out the window.
Yep. So anyway, one last deal. Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there for a practical guide to free energy devices. It's a 70 megabytes, 3,055 pages of alternative energy devices. It says, kudos to the compiler. There's a lot of work put together here, and he's got a www.freeenergy. Well, just have to jump over to superchat.html and grab the link. It's too much. I got to get out of here.
Let me say something to Stephen there, just because I know you're listening now. Many thanks for many times, because many times you put so much into that chat and stuff. You're always putting very interesting stuff in there that I think is great. Appreciate that. Just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, even though he hasn't chosen to be a radio host yet, he's been part of the team forever and a day, because he comes up with some really brilliant stuff.
And yes, he does.
We appreciate that. And so, with that said, you've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. It's easy as a Skype call to become a Knight of the Round Table, and just a respectful trading of information and knowledge. And if you want to be an honorary Knight of the Round Table, it's as easy as just going in there and posting some pertinent links or information to share with people. It's all about teaching each other all the alternatives to the system that is the beast that's eating us all alive. That's what it's all about, folks. We got to make the world a better place, but ain't nobody but us can do it.
Do have a link where you can join the Skype conversation if you have a Skype account.
Yeah.
Look for it. It's on the page. That's how to get in here.
So, there you go. It's as easy as that. Add Shaziz or Muddy Muddy Mudman or any of the hosts that you hear on there, add them to Skype, and they'll get you in contact. If you want to be a radio host, or you know, just come on the show, share something, or post some banner ads or some links, it's all free here, folks. Nobody's asking you for nothing.
I'll set your encoder up for you and help you find a spot in the schedule, and just go ahead and host your own show.
Yeah, we're not asking for donations. We're not asking for any money for any free energy devices. All the information here is gathered up and given away for free, and that's the way it should be. You know, that's what our deal is here. So
it's your voice for free.
It's a platform. It's the people's platform, and if you want to use it, it's available to you. Tell your friends on all your social medias, your Facebooks, your Twitters, your YouTubes. Tell them about Shaziz Radio and what we're doing here, and bring them on. Come join us and meet up with some good people. I've met some wonderful friends through this process. So with that said, I'll carry the burden of the bills behind the scenes. I just, all the thing I ask in reply is everybody be respectful to each other, and they use this platform. And if anybody ever asks you for money out here, it has nothing to do with me, because I will not ask you for money.
That's right.
So, with that said, you've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, and stay tuned. Take care.
Woman, man. Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't...
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh!
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to... Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsing-able. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
The turbo! All rise for the king! Serve the turbo and the knights of the round table!